This week on the Friday edition, the Valley Public Utilities District has been hosting a tribal broadband boot camp this past week, bringing in experts and folks who work in tribal broadband from multiple tribes, including Yurok, Karuk, New Perce, Pitt River, Fort Bidwell, Fort Peck, Navajo, Hopi, Cree, and Chippewa, all visiting the Hoopa Valley. We spoke to some of those experts on the Friday edition this week. What is a tribal broadband boot camp?
Matthew Rantanen at Southern California Tribal Chairman's Association, Director of Technology, and the Vice President of Tribal Broadband at Golden State Network. A tribal broadband boot camp is, for lack of a better reason to use the word boot camp, it's not a conference. It's a gathering of like-minded individuals who are trying to figure out how to build and sustain and attract broadband for their communities, whether or not they're going to have a utility that's broadband, start up a company that's broadband, entertain outside resources as broadband. This is a place where people can get together and understand what that is, what that means, how to fund it, how to manage it, how to sustain it, and learn that you're not doing this by yourself. You are actually in a like-minded group of peers from different reservations doing the same exact thing.
And it's hands-on. I'm Christopher Mitchell at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in St. Paul, Minnesota. So often we're building something, a network, a wireless network, a fiber optic network, or something like that. And so it's not just sitting back and learning, it's activities.
Okay, so all of your attendees then have some active broadband projects that they're working on right now?
Some are aspirational.
Okay.
Yeah, some are aspirational. And that's actually the best time to start these boot camps is you dip your toe in the water, figure out if you like it before you get too far down the path.
Well, I always thought it's easier to see what other people are doing rather than try to build your own wheel, you know, so to speak, right? See what, hey, that's a great idea. I'm going to steal it, right?
Yeah, and as I've been doing this for 22 years, I've built a lot of horrible wheels that don't roll. So let's learn from my bad wheels, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and I think another piece of it is building confidence. I think a lot of people have a sense that internet access is complicated. It's a mystery. It's indecipherable. And when you have a sense of how other people have solved these, and you can actually start off from the very first day, and you crimp a cable, and you build something that could be a part of the internet, then you have a sense, oh, I can figure this out. I don't need to spend 8 years getting a doctorate or something like that. I could just jump in with the right group of people and learn how to make it work.
And speak the language.
Yeah, there's nothing more humbling than putting together a networking cable and it doesn't work.
Right. That leads to triumph, though.
Yeah, true.
I'm Monica Brain. I am a project specialist at Amerind Critical Infrastructure. For folks, because this is radio, Chris, maybe you could explain exactly what crimping a cable looks like.
Yeah, it's taking what you might think of as an Ethernet cable, or, you know, if you are not familiar with that, a telephone cable that is a little bit thicker, and basically putting connectors on each end so that it will pass data from one side to the other side. What I think is important to emphasize is just that for a lot of people who are listening to this, I think many of them, you probably don't have a sense of how the internet works. And it really helps to just start by grounding yourself with one wire and then connecting it to devices and getting a sense that this is the internet is that at scale, right? It's a lot of devices, it's a lot of wires, but it's physical things that you can understand. So there's eight little wires within the larger bundled wire.
And four pairs, basically. And so they're usually two colors. One of them's white, and then it's like white and orange, white and blue, white and brown, and white and green.
I think you might be dating yourself.
There might be different now, yeah.
Yeah, striped and solid colors typically now.
The last time I paid attention to this sort of thing, I think it's up to Cat 7 now.
Yes. Yep.
Cat 6 is common use. Cat 7 is the next step.
And that means category?
Yeah, but it's one of those things, kind of like DSL, like nobody knows what the abbreviation means.
Line?
Digital service
line. Digital
subscriber line. See, it doesn't matter. It's just like, but yeah, Cat 6 is just, you know, it just gives you a sense of the larger the number, the more data it can pass over time. And often the harder it is to crimp and turn into a useful cable.
And DSL doesn't exist in Hoopa. I am Matthew Douglas, also known in the broadband space as Spaggy. And I am the broadband manager for the Hoopa Valley Public Utilities District service called Acorn Wireless. We skipped that generation. We're still at dial-up and satellite services. So we're going to jump straight to fiber from there.
I'm Linnea Jackson. I'm the general manager with Hoopa Valley Public Utilities. I just wanted to, while it's fresh in my mind, to talk about the Tribal Broadband Boot Camps and what they've meant to me. Coming from a more of an executive or administrative position, being able to jump in, get hands-on with crimping, they're doing network deployments, they're talking about troubleshooting, they're talking about spectrum and frequency, and it's creating this world of network and peers, and there really wasn't a tribal location that included different tribal members. You know, I think it's created this environment and this family, if you speak, that we can rely on to pose questions or provide resources, and it's provided an environment.
It's 2 years since we did the first one, and we didn't exactly know what we were doing. The plan was to pull people together, some of whom we thought of as instructors and others of whom we thought of as being people that were there to learn mostly. But we very rapidly found, thanks to Spagy here, that it was less of a line than we thought, because immediately the people we brought in as instructors were learning about how Spagy was building and operating his network and troubleshooting it and the software that he was using. And so that is how it's continued. But it's been tremendously blessed by Hoopa Valley. Between Linnea and Spagy, we have learned a lot, and it's really given us the sense that it's worth continuing to do. And it's really exciting to be here now. And it's remarkable that it's only 2 years later, but to see the progress that's going on. I mean, people here might take it for granted, but this is the largest NTIA award to date, I believe, which mm-hmm. is the big money going out to tribes. This is a really ambitious, exciting project, not just the network, but the data center. You know, this is truly an inspiring project across Indian country.
And it was an eye-opener for Chris and I as we created the first one and had this event. And then we decided, wow, that went really well. Let's do another one just to make sure it was real. And Spagy and Linnea came back. So we knew we were doing it right.
That's right.
So as my comment, like, I've been to all of the boot camps so far. And I think one of the benefits to it is just the exposure to different vernacular or different ideas. When Acorn first started, we were just trying to find our place in getting data or broadband services to the community, but it exposed us to digital equity and digital inclusion initiatives. And that's what pushed us to apply for like the NDIA grant that we were able to hire Abe on, our digital navigator. Short little plug, call him at 530-625-6300 if you need to get help with your digital devices, digital education, or ACP. Doing these boot camps and getting that exposure helped us find our voice to apply for the large NTIA grant. So we definitely are grateful for, you know, the partners and the collaboration that we were able to achieve due to all of that exposure.
One of the things that I really love about the boot camp is that Chris and Matt create an environment that makes it safe for you to ask questions, for you not to know. I came to work for Amerind Critical Infrastructure from being a journalist, from, you know, just working on the radio, basically, to helping tribes build these broadband networks. And I never once felt like it wasn't kosher for me to ask even just a really basic question. I remember probably 6 months after I had gone to the boot camp, you know, asking, wait, what is the internet? I'm not 100% sure. Like, where, when you get your internet from someone else, where do they get it from? And is there like...
I'll bet if you ask that question in Washington, D.C., there's thousands of people who are responsible for working on this issue, and like 10 of them could answer that question.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
We know that for a fact.
Okay, so answer the question then for folks on the radio who are listening who might not know, who are just wondering.
Well, this gets into how much we want to kind of blow your mind, but the internet is not really a thing. We access the internet over telecommunications lines, whether that's a dial-up telephone or a cable modem, or here a fiber optic cable or wireless cable, wireless not cable, a wireless connection. And the internet is the interlinking of lots of different networks. So here you might be on Acorn Wireless, and at home I'm on a big cable company network, and I can video chat with Spagy because they are interconnected. And the internet is the willingness to interconnect and the actual interconnections. But any given wire is not the internet. So it's a kind of weird metaphysical thing, which is the agreement of networks to interconnect is the internet. And all of the things that are on the internet are part of the internet. So we each have devices right now that are part of the internet, and we participate in the internet when we send messages to each other and everything else. But a lot of people think of it more as like something they get from Acorn Wireless, but Acorn Wireless is a participant in the global worldwide internet.
And so when you're building out a community network, you can build from a central hub on your reservation, and you can build out to your tribal homes and your tribal municipalities. But if you don't connect that to another network, you are only talking to each other. You don't have access to the resources that are global. And when you start to connect to other peer points, other networks that allow you to gather information from all the rest of the networks in the world, that's when you start participating in the internet. So if you don't do that, you have an intranet, which is local.
And
what, or an island.
And that's, there's benefits to that, sure. From the tribal perspective, to have kind of a digital sovereignty kind of actions, where with our data center, we want to be able to enable language preservation, cultural preservation, and just getting like the tribe's history online in a way that is private and secure to just our tribal nation rather than to the entire internet. So the intranet method is something that we are looking into for.
And you can manage both in the same infrastructure.
Correct.
I think it was Dr. Chief Yonker up in Oregon. We were working with them, and he made the point, and I'm sorry if it was someone else, but that this isn't about necessarily just bringing the internet to tribal communities. It is about bringing tribal wisdom and experiences to the world, mm-hmm. as well. And that's something that I just think people sometimes forget, is this is not about Netflix. This is about everyone being able to communicate and share their ideas. And that's what's magic about it, is not that we can get cool stuff, it's that we can contribute cool stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of industry being created without the perspective of the native voice. And when the native voice gets on the internet, then the native voice gets heard. So we can influence the development of artificial intelligence, influence the development of what the future of the networks look like. And if tribes are not on the network or are not on the internet, tribes don't have that seat at the table. So that's why it's so important to get these voices connected to the internet.
That's a good definition of the internet to me.
Been working on it for 16 years.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I think what the experiences that tribes are getting moving forward into this technology is that tribes are learning to stop being consumers and start being providers and start being owners of the internet, rather than just always consuming somebody else's expensive pathway to this. They're actually providing that pathway, and they are owners of their piece of the internet.
One thing that I think that you need to speak to is how many tribes have been able to attend these broadband boot camps, how they're funded, and what you need for future events.
So the boot camps have reached right around 40 tribes, maybe a little bit more. About, I think, 10 tribal organizations have attended, and we're at we're over 250 attendees. I think we're getting closer to 300 attendees at this point. We have a unique situation where we thought every boot camp was going to be a different set of people. And what we're realizing is that, like Spaghi has been to every boot camp, there are people that have been to multiple boot camps. And the value that was explained to me by one attendee was that I understood these things when I came to the first boot camp and I asked these questions. But now that I've been to a boot camp, my knowledge level has increased to here. So I want to go to another boot camp because now I can ask different questions and more informed questions and get further. And then I'm like, would you go to another boot camp? Yeah, because I know my knowledge level will grow again and I'll be able to ask more and more in-depth questions. And so it's not about a boot camp. And so we don't have, you know, 1,000 unique users, but we have, you know, a bunch of attendees that have been multiple times and a bunch of unique people as well. So it's a different ecosystem than I think we were originally planning.
In different areas, we've focused on different things. So we are very focused on wireless here. We were up on Bald Hill for a sector install on that tower. And in other places, we're focused on fiber optics. And we focus on different challenges within that as well. We've been welcomed down to Gila River Indian Community most recently before this. And we were in Yurok last year. We have plans to move forward with more events. And we're always looking for people that are excited to host. I think we're still trying to figure out how to be sustainable. Everything's been grant funded through philanthropy to date. And we've had some really great partnerships, but it's difficult to plan ahead and to be able to make that work without having more, dedicated revenues or things like that. So I think that it is the case that if people would like to host and if they have training funds available from federal funds that could be tapped into, that's kind of for us, I think the next step of the next round of boot camps is finding hosts who have some money so that we don't have to try to raise it all. Because we try to make sure that anyone can attend. No one has to pay. But if people have money they can contribute, then that makes it easier for us to make sure other folks can attend.
The majority of your installs that you've experienced so far can be said to be remote. You know, not necessarily, you know, it's like you said, you where you live, you can just get Comcast or whatever, right? I think the one on the coast is Suddenlink. But here we have to get distributed via wireless to get to here. And so I guess my question is, in terms of the remote sites, have you had any integrations with solar and other sustainable energy platforms?
Locally here, Acorn Wireless is dependent on an off-grid tower. We had a CPUC grant, the California Advanced Services Fund. It was titled the Hoopa Valley Broadband Initiative. We purchased and constructed a tower on Sugar Pine that is a fully off-grid location. It has solar panels with battery storage and then a backup generator when the battery voltage goes too low because the solar can't handle it. To date, we've only had one power-related outage at that site, so it's been a very good location. Surprisingly, the runtime on the generator at this off-grid site has less run hours than the generator on Bald Hill, which is grid-tied.
Which is grid, yeah.
And so we definitely are putting some metrics to the instability of power for the Bald Hill district, for sure.
In Southern California, the Tribal Digital Village Network that has been running since 2001 that I'm a part of and have been director of technology now for 21 years of that. There are 28 towers now, and 20 of them are completely off-grid. They run on solar power as a primary, and they have a propane generator as a backup. And realistically, the backup, it doesn't run on the propane generator. The propane generator recharges the batteries to full, and then it shuts off, and then the batteries run the network. So we have way less outages on the solar system than we do on the grid system. The grid is way less reliable than the actual sun. Imagine that. And you know, we have a lot of outages based on high wind, fire threat, and things like that. And then just maintenance failures where the network will go down. We do have generators on all of our grid sites because of that very, very fact. But yeah, harnessing the sun, harnessing wind energy, and some of the newer green technologies is the way of the future for a lot of these networks that are in really remote locations.
And I think it's worth noting that there's a lot of land where there's not good internet access, but there's a lot of people in cities where there might be internet access available and they're not able to use it. And that's not something that we have a solution for. And, we see a path and there's federal dollars available right now to try and help in more rural areas. But there is an ongoing need to make sure that people in urban areas who, you know, are struggling with poverty are able to be connected. That is an ongoing challenge that I think ultimately will be harder to resolve than the more remote areas.
Yeah, going back to the solar power, there are some folks at this boot camp this week that come from the Navajo Reservation who are they focus on solar power and building solar power to houses. And I think it's really cool to see this sort of integration where they are thinking ahead, like, we're going to bring electricity and we're going to bring internet. And how do we do that? Yeah. And we've had some sort of brainstorming sessions with them and talking about it.
Yeah, I was able to have a conversation with them as well. And it was kind of like we were two sides of the same coin, because when Acorn first started, we had power issues. That was one of the main areas that we didn't have an expertise to kind of take on and solve. And on their side, they have reliable power, but data issues to where they can't monitor and maintain their equipment remotely. So they have to go from site to site to site to maintain their systems. And so we were having a conversation where he was asking me about how to get data from one place to another wirelessly. And I was talking to him about how do I get, you know, this battery pack to charge to a certain voltage without, you know, overcharging. And we just had these two conversations because the expertise kind of meld together. And I was like, well, I can donate 5 hours of my time to like help you out with an issue you have. And you can donate 5 hours of your time to help me with this issue. And we were like, all right, we can talk later.
Yeah, and that's with Native Renewables is the name of that organization.
Yeah. A lot of good trades in this system.
So how has the broadband rollout gone on so far here in the Hoopa Valley?
No problems.
Seamless.
All right. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Well, this is probably one of my first larger infrastructure projects that I'm working on. So I am pulling from a team of experts and a team of people with experience to try and make the right decisions. One of the eye-opening components to a $65 million project is a lot of the work doesn't actually go to the work that's the community is going to see. A lot of it is pre-construction, and we're definitely trying to move forward on those pre-construction steps. I'm learning that, land acquisition or right-of-way acquisition is a tedious endeavor. Environmental studies are a requirement, and that is taking a long time. And all of that has to happen after we determine which are the best routes to take. And so that's where we're at currently, is we're trying to figure out, or we're trying to finalize the contract and move forward with an engineering firm that can build the design to each home. And it gets a little insane on how much detail has to go into that design, to the point where, let's say we're going to put conduit in the ground from A to B. Not only do we have to determine that line from A to B, but the conduit has to be rolled out so that it can be put into that line. And how you roll that out matters for the environmental studies and how it's going to impact the foliage or whatever's on the ground. And so the level of detail for 120 miles of fiber that we're going to have to put into the ground has to all be designed before we can even send in our environmental group to do the study.
Yeah, there's a lot of people have no idea the planning takes approximately 18 months to 2 years before you actually get to dig a trench and put fiber in the ground.
Yeah, and so you can do all that planning, but as you go through different allotments of property and who the owner is, and how that is, I'm learning that there's a lot of complexity even to that. So you can plan to build A to B, but whether or not you get the permission to build A to B depends on what land you're on and who owns it and if they want you to build it. So long story short, it feels like, okay, we did get this big grant and there's not a lot of movement, but there definitely is a lot of work that's been going into these projects. I guess our ultimate vision is with that grant, specifically the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program through NTIA, is to get to as many homes as we can. And the problem that we've ran into also is that when we applied for this grant, pricing was a lot different for the fiber, the conduit, and the materials to build. And so NTIA was a year late to even award it to us. I know Matt is still waiting. So we were lucky to be one of the first tribes to receive this large of an award, but it still put us behind on what inflation had occurred and how we're going to get a hold of the materials to build it. So we're trying to work with state partners to get access to stockpiled materials that we can build faster than and then maybe other builders will get access to that same materials.
I think lucky is an interesting word, having observed you during part of this process where you would not hear anything for a month or two from the people you were working with on the grant side. And then they would surface and say, whatever your plans are, we have 36 subpart questions, each with 4 subparts, and we need you to answer them in the next 48 hours. And you navigated that with a lot of skill. And so I would just say, let's ignore the word luck.
Yeah. You have forded the river of chaos to get across to the other side, and it's pretty impressive. I think another thing that people don't realize is that COVID caused a lot of issues with supply chain. COVID caused a lot of issues with, you know, let's not let a good emergency go to waste. So all of these opportunities grew out of COVID. In that process, everybody's building broadband. All the contractors that build broadband are building broadband. So if you're a new build on the block and you want to use an existing contractor, that contractor is more busy than they've ever been. So the prices have gone up based on demand, and the availability of product has gone, you know, through the roof, getting a hold of things. Timelines are stretched out to 18 months on new fiber. If you're a new customer, if you don't have an existing relationship, there's a lot of complexities that have come into play. And it's amazing that, you know, you're able to manage all of that and move forward. It's impressive.
So for the community that's listening to this, you know, we have some ideas of how we want to approach outreach and be able to have events so we can educate the community on where we're at and what our plans are for that. We don't have any kind of event planned yet, but we do know that we need to have outreach so that we can include you in this process and not make it seem like we're throwing a solution at you that you don't agree with. So that is going to be in the works. I can't give you a date now, but we will be back on the radio program at some point with an event that we will plan. And ideally, we'll have some barbecue. But I don't know if it's in the budget.
I'm all ears.
It's been really great coming here and seeing Linnea in operation and talking to her staff behind her back and getting a sense of the admiration that they have for you. So I just wanted to throw that in as well. This whole process has been a challenge for everyone that's had to go through it. I just get to watch you all doing the hard work. But it's been really great meeting the different crews and actually seeing the land here and everything. So I feel super honored to be here.
I have a question of Linnea, actually, if I can.
Sure.
So what is it like, and Speggy too, but what is it like hosting a boot camp versus attending a boot camp away from home? Because I know there's complexities when you bring something like this into the community.
Well, for one, I enjoy event planning. I enjoy the anticipation of having people come and share who you are. And that's something that is really important to me. And I had my staff on board. It takes everyone's help to kind of collaborate the event. There's those people that are planning and doing the food and organizing everything. So I think for me, it's a very personal thing because we're sharing who we are, where we're from, and our environment and our tribe.
You think it helps your staff and your whole team have a better understanding of what this big picture is?
Yes. So I think they get a better understanding of why Speggy and I and the other crew are going on these trips, why it's important, how we're investing, what we're learning, the conversations that happen. And I think you reflect after the boot camp and realize the impact that it had on you. And I think everyone will feel that same way.
And the other day, Linnea invited like almost all broadband staff to a contract meeting with the engineering firm just to see how tedious that process is just to get the contract in place. This is without the engineering happening. And at least from my experience of being a co-host for a boot camp versus a participant is essentially I had a pretty big ambitious goal of wanting to deploy something that would stay in production and actually serve the community that the boot camp was being hosted in. And so the coordination, the planning that it took to be able to have every piece in place for this 3-day period at a specific time was pretty daunting. But luckily, I feel like we've had very good educational opportunities for our staff to where they were in a place that they can kind of wing it a little bit. And they kind of knew their role already because we have been working for roughly 3 years now on these types of projects. And that experience led to what I feel like is becoming a success for that, because we've hit every deadline that we've achieved or going after for this boot camp. So that's pretty cool.
I think if nothing else, your staff should appreciate that the benefits of getting to travel to other places are outweighed by the fact that you're locked in a location that's 101 degrees with Matt and I in charge for 3 days. And now your staff all knows the pain of at least that latter part.
I just wanted to add one other comment, because I think that Smeggy and I know how much work goes on a day-to-day basis, but we are really going to be reliant on the community support, our tribal council support, and outlying communities as we build out our network. It hasn't been perfect, but there is an extreme amount of work that goes in, blood, sweat, and tears, if you will, that's going into this. We care about what we're doing, and we need that continued support.
Yeah, I mean, every community has to deal with traffic disruptions, with people wanting to get the service and it's not available yet, things that can go wrong, yards dug up a little bit here and there. And so people need to take patience and understand that this is an investment that literally the children of children who are not yet born will be using this network. It's going to be in service for that long.
So the last comment I wanted to do was to thank Matthew Rantanen and Christopher Mitchell for being really, really cool people, down to earth and visionaries. So thank you for letting us be a part of your world. And you've definitely made an impact on Hoopa and our network and myself personally.
That's absolutely a pleasure. And you've helped shape our world as well. So it's mutual.
I've learned a tremendous amount and it's been a wonderful experience.
All right. I want to thank everyone for joining us for the Friday edition. Speaking with us today on the Friday edition, Monica Brain, Christopher Mitchell, Matthew Rantanen, and Linnea Jackson and Matt Douglas of Acorn Wireless. The Friday edition is a public affairs presentation of KIDE Hoopa Tribal Radio. We thank you for listening.